Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine. You're listening to a new The Hacker Factory podcast with hacker maker Philip Wiley. You're about to discover what the role of a professional hacker entails, the different specializations it holds, and what it takes to learn and become one. Enjoy the conversation as Philip and guests unveil the secrets of professional hacking. A mysterious, intriguing, and often misunderstood occupation. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
BugCrowd's award-winning platform combines actionable contextual intelligence with the skill and experience of the world's most elite hackers to help leading organizations identify and fix vulnerabilities, protect customers, and make the digitally connected world a safer place. Learn more at bugcrowd.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Hacker Factory podcast. I'm your host, Philip Wiley. I refer to myself as the Hacker Maker because I am passionate about helping others get into offensive cybersecurity as pen testers, bug hunters, and other areas of the offensive security realm. And each episode, I have a unique guest with a unique story that will hopefully help you on your journey or inspire you to further your efforts in becoming a pen tester or other areas of cybersecurity. In this episode, I'm happy to have my friend Corey Billington on. Corey is a member of my local community, and I believe the first time we met in person was at the North Texas ISSA conference back in, was that 2018?
It would have been 2019.
Okay, 2019.
Maybe late 2018.
I don't remember now. Yeah, I think it was 2019. Yeah. So welcome to the show, Corey. Thanks for joining.
Thanks for having me, Phil.
Yeah. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Yeah. So my name's Corey. I am a red teamer at a Fortune 50 company. Come from kind of an interesting background, though I think most people that I meet in offensive security and information security in general kind of come from an interesting background. But I would say a little bit of a late bloomer, getting into the field. I got into it in my mid 30s. Originally I, right after high school, I joined the military and served 6 years in the Navy. I was a fire controlman. I worked on what's called a SeaWiz mount, which is a giant gun that has search and track radar and shoots down like incoming anti-ship missiles. I was stationed on a ship for 5 years where I did the maintenance and operation of that weapon system. And when I got out, the plan was to go into finance just because I was kind of researching that stuff at the time. And it seemed really interesting to me. So I planned to get out, use the GI Bill, go to school, and kind of go that direction. So when I got out, I set out to do that and didn't really do too great at it. So school wasn't really a great fit for me. So I ended up getting a job at a racetrack / driving school, kind of doing grounds maintenance with the hopes of moving into doing driving instruction, just because I've been into cars pretty much my whole life. And I've always, anytime I had the free time, you know, I was out working on my car or I would go hit up a track day, go out and do some laps in whatever car I had that worked at the time. So yeah, that kind of, I got pretty decent at driving just from doing, you know, tons of track days on my off time. So I kind of transitioned that over to, jumping in and teaching classes when I could. And ended up doing more and more of that. And after that job, I moved over to being a pawnbroker. So I was a pawnbroker for about 3 years. That was a super cool industry. I got to meet a lot of like really interesting people, learned a lot about a lot of like really interesting, obscure stuff. Learn more than I probably will ever need to know about jewelry and watches and whatnot, how to spot fake ones. It was a super fun field. I bought a lot of really cool things, sold a lot of really cool things. It was a super interesting field. That could be a whole show by itself. So after that, I felt like developed a pretty good skill set for like dealing with customers and selling things. So the driving school that I originally worked at had one of my friends had started managing it. So I kind of went back out there with the hopes of moving into a sales position out there. And that didn't work at all. So turns out that just because I was okay working in a pawn shop and dealing with customers there, that didn't really translate over very well to doing more like corporate sales. So I just wasn't for me. So I lasted all of, a couple of months out there. And now I'm getting into my 30s at this point. And this is kind of where the actual story starts. So I went back to school, used the GI Bill again, or what was left of it, to do a 2-year degree in computer programming and then network security. Did that for about a year and a half and spent all of my free time that I had where I wasn't doing schoolwork studying on my own. So I got really into the idea of security at that point, just from doing a few projects and researching and kind of coming across, mention of the field and going down rabbit holes and kind of like, hey, that seems really cool. I didn't really realize that there was an entire, field around just penetration testing or, just hacking. So I started studying that more and more, which led me down more rabbit holes and led me to almost breaking the computers that I had. And that's kind of how I got interested in the field. Also got me interested in Linux. So I spent a lot of time trying to build things in Linux. So I set up, various things at home, file servers, print servers, you name it. I would try to set those systems up and then research different settings on them, research common like security misconfigurations, how to fix those, how to set it up like more securely. After doing enough of that, I kind of felt like I should start applying for jobs. So I did. I applied to one of the only places where I lived that had, a lot of IT presence, and eventually got a job as a Linux sysadmin did some software development there, dealt with mainly Red Hat systems, kind of got me introduced to like a large enterprise type environment. At that point, I think I worked there for about a year and a half and exposure to a ton of stuff. It's kind of crazy now that I think back on it, like all the different stuff I got exposed to working there. Tons of legacy stuff. Just a lot of stuff. So while I was there, I finished my 2-year degree. And once I finished that, I think I took about a month off. And then they were willing to pay for my OSCP. So that's how I ended up starting my OSCP. And instead of continuing on with a 4-year degree, I decided I was going to take a semester off and do OSCP. So I think I spent 4 months total doing OSCP. I had originally got 2 months of lab time, and then I ended up re-upping, I think, twice. And then I was coming up on the third time, and I was like, you know what, screw this. I'm just going to go for it and see what this test is all about. and at that point, I'd gone to a couple of meetings and done some CTFs with a local college. Not the one I was going to, but a local university that was in the area. They kind of got me introduced to doing CTFs, which I had tried and done a couple on my own with walkthroughs, but didn't really get too into them. But when I went back and started doing them again, I was obviously a little bit more well-versed in Linux, and kind of the competitive environment got me going. And that's how I kind of got exposed to it. But I actually didn't do a whole lot of the lab in OSCP, but I think the combination of that and then some IPsec videos that I watched pretty religiously towards the end part of my lab time. I somehow got OSCP on my first try. Got that. And then I think 3 or 4 months later, I had started applying to pen testing jobs because I felt like at that point I had OSCP. So I kind of felt a little bit more validated applying for jobs. Like I wasn't going to apply and people would just see my application and like, who the heck is this dude that's been in IT for like, you know, since breakfast? Like, why is he applying to these jobs? So I don't know if that's the case or not. It was probably just me, you know, having the usual imposter syndrome type thing going on. But yeah, I applied and got a call back on one job, interviewed, and then got offered the position. And that's kind of how I ended up in the field. So that's my story in a, what, 10-minute nutshell, I think.
Yeah, very, very interesting. A lot of the things I didn't know about you, you're the first person that was in, that served in the Navy on here. We've had Air Force and Marines on here. So that's interesting. And then the interest in the racing and working in that area, those tracks, and then the pawn shop stuff. That's pretty interesting. So you went from pawn shops to pawn shops. So, So that's pretty cool.
When I think back now, I think about like, cause we dealt with the laptops a lot. And I'm like, man, like the world is my oyster with like all these different laptops that would come in. So just all the different ways that I can think of now, like we'd have computers that were locked that we couldn't get into. And I'm like, God, this is like so easy now that I know how this stuff works. I mean, what was I thinking back then?
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. Could you just imagine the stuff that people didn't pick up from pawn or they sold that someone could probably went through there and recovered all sorts of stuff off of there they thought they deleted?
For sure. What is it? I forget the name of the tool that I'd use for that. Starts with 4, but yeah, I can't remember right now. But
yeah, so someone from DHA at one time talked about a project he was thinking about doing. I don't know if he ever did or not, but was thinking about going to one of the libraries in Oklahoma that loans out computers or laptops and just as an experiment, see what he could recover off of those. I don't know if he ever did that or not, but that would have been interesting.
Yeah, it's called Foremost.
Foremost, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and early. So is that specifically a forensics tool or some other type of Linux tool?
Yeah, it's forensics. So you can do, like, you do basically do a pass over a disk and it looks for specific, like, file signatures. So if there's like a JPEG, like it'll have that, you know, those magic bytes in the beginning. So it looks for those and then it will try to recover the file based on that.
Oh, cool. So
it's pretty cool. Pretty cool tool.
Yeah. That's the first time I heard of that one. My wife does digital forensics and they use some of the different commercial tools and stuff. So that's pretty interesting.
Yeah. I think the other big one is PhotoRec.
So yeah, that's pretty awesome that you passed the OSCP on the first time around. And I'm sure the Linux sysadmin stuff, I'm sure had to help because I think that's a big learning curve for some folks that haven't done much with Linux and they get in there trying to navigate Linux and figure things out. So if that must have been a huge help going into it, I would imagine.
Yeah, it was. I would say one of the biggest helps is, I think I had mentioned it, but you know, we dealt with a few different subnets that we would have machines on and transferring data in and out of those. So at times I'd run into different, you know, hurdles that I'd have to jump through to move data from, you know, one machine to another. And it would be, you know, across different subnets or there'd be something blocking, you know, the typical way that I would know how to transfer data. So that would kind of lead me to like, oh, well, that won't work. So let me see if I can like stand up a HTTP server and curl the data over, or let me see if I can rsync it over, or, you know, at times it was like, well, crap, let me just try Netcat and try a bunch of different ports and see if maybe one of these will let me through. And sure enough, maybe one would, and I could, pipe the data through Netcat over to another Netcat listener, which would pipe it into, you know, like a zip, it would write it to a zip file or something like that. So kind of researching different like goofy things like that proved to be really useful. just because it was a lot more intuitive to me. Once I, you know, got command execution on a machine, you know, how would I transfer a file up that I needed to, you know, run a shell or something like that? Like, that stuff was just super intuitive to me. So that would actually be one of my recommendations for people that are doing OSCP, would be to get very familiar with transferring data, just kind of having like that stuff be muscle memory, like your usual shell commands, you know, netcat listeners, Python web servers, that type of stuff. Just kind of get into the habit of having that stuff be muscle memory, just so that you can focus your brain power and your searching on, you know, the problem at hand, and not necessarily, I guess a physical way to put it would be looking for the tools in your toolbox. I kind of think of having that stuff like intuitive, or a list of notes that you can quickly reference, as like having your toolbox organized in a garage.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So it seemed like you kind of picked up the hacker mindset pretty quickly, even before you got into studying the OSCP.
Yeah, I would say I guess I picked up maybe the hacker's mindset in the sense of taking things apart and putting them back together, but I would definitely credit my first position, and specifically like one of the guys I worked with kind of giving me not just a hacker's mindset, but like an attacker's mindset, basically immediately transitioning to think of like abusing something. But yeah, definitely hacker's mindset. I would attribute that just to always taking things apart, trying to put them back together. Not necessarily computers when I was younger, just because I didn't have a lot of them laying around, but cars, you know, building ramps for my bike, taking my bike apart and putting it back together, having to work with a limited budget because I didn't grow up and have like a ton of money per se. So I kind of just had to build things as I wanted them.
Yeah, very cool. So for someone that's getting started out now, since, you know, you've been through this, you know, I'm sure maybe there's things you would do different, maybe you wouldn't change, but, you know, kind of if you had to do over again, what would you do different, and what would you recommend for someone else that's wanting to get started?
I would say the biggest recommendation I would have is, so I got a little bit discouraged while I was going through, just by hearing, I guess, I'm sure if, like, I'm sure you've heard this in the industry, or like even as you're coming into the industry, or from other people that are coming into the industry, that you need to have, you know, a ton of time doing all these different roles in IT before you can get into offensive security and be good at it. My recommendation would be to not listen to that, and just kind of pursue what you're interested in. Just because, I mean, this is the kind of field where I feel like you're going to have to put a lot of time into whatever you do. And that's, I'm not saying like put in like the time until you get burned out in it, because you definitely don't want to do that. But you'll have to spend a lot of time studying. So I don't really feel like I could do that if it's not something that I'm like truly interested in, that really like kind of keeps me coming back to learn more. So I would say to kind of chase those things that you're interested in, and sort of like let them guide you to learn the things that you might not be so interested in. But you'll probably have like a lot of people tell you when you're getting into the industry that, like, you know, you don't need to be worried about security or anything like that. That's for people that have been doing this for 7 years. Like, you need to just learn the basics first. And I kind of disagree with that. Like, I say go learn about security, and that's inevitably going to force you to have to learn those basics, which is sort of what I did against the advice that I got when I was in school. So I obviously was like, hey, this sounds really interesting. Like, I'm going to learn how to do this. And I mean, one of those things was dual booting a laptop that I had. It was like my only laptop. This is a really bad idea, and I wouldn't recommend doing it. I'd definitely recommend like getting a cheap laptop from a pawn shop or something and using that to install stuff on. But still, like let the curiosity guide you. Like, I had no idea what I was doing. I didn't know what any of the partitions were. Like, I just saw a bunch of like slashes and like, you know, paths, and I was like, okay, sure, whatever, enter. Like, just keep installing. Like, I don't care. or I was like following a guide and like, just, okay, it says what it says to do in the guide, like enter. Sure. Like, let's see what happens. Hopefully my computer doesn't explode. Yeah, I would say like, do those things, like be curious. Don't break your only laptop. Don't break your only computer, but like, let those things that you're curious about guide you into learning the things that, like learning the basics. That would be my recommendation.
Good advice. Yeah. And I think the advice about not listening to people that are trying to tell you, you have to do this that many years, I kind of sum it up to a couple different things. One, it's either gatekeeping or someone got started in it, you know, cause back when I got started in security, I'd spent 6 years as a sysadmin. In 2004, I moved over into the security team and we were doing network security and some risk assessments. And so back when I was getting into it, not a lot of companies had their own security departments, or they haven't had it long. So I think a lot of people are basing on their experience. And, you know, it's like I'll share with people sometimes too, is have a sysadmin level knowledge of the operating systems, but doesn't mean you have to go spend X amount of time as a sysadmin, because, you know, some people get their first jobs, period, technology wise as a pen tester. So definitely some good advice there.
100%. One of the guys that I work with, which I mentioned him earlier, I've learned a ton from him, and yeah, it was his very first job in, his very first job was a pen tester, and dude runs circles around me. It's amazing, you know, like if I have questions, like that's usually the first person I ask, and yeah, first job. So yeah, I'm a firm believer that even if my advice doesn't resonate with you, then by all means, like, don't listen to me, because like there are a million ways to do this. And like, yeah, just if you can't find a way, then make your own path, you know, like chop the bushes down yourself and just get through it. And yeah, like it'll work.
Yeah, that's good advice, because everyone's kind of different. And one of the things that I would do, I've had people ask me, you know, and I would never discourage anyone, even if I didn't think they're ready to be a pen tester, because, you know, one of the things you don't want to do, and one of the things that makes me think of is, I saw a meme one time, or a saying that they said, that have the confidence of a 4-year-old in a Batman shirt, you know? So, you know, when you're in that state of mind, you can do anything. You haven't been in the world long enough to have enough negative experiences to discourage you. So don't let people discourage you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, I remember not knowing anything about anything, and I didn't need anybody to tell me that I didn't know anything about anything. So like, I just like, I'm going to try not to do that to anybody else. You know, like, I'd hate to be the reason that that person felt discouraged and, you know, just kind of gave up and was like, this kind of sucks, you know, like, I don't know anything about it. And the people that do are mean to me. So like, I just wouldn't want to be that person to somebody. So, if somebody doesn't know what they're doing, you know, like, obviously you can kindly offer them advice, but like, they're going to figure it out, you know, like, they're going to realize that they're in over their head, so that they don't need anybody to come in and, you know, be mean or like demean them or tell them they don't know what they're doing. You know, like, you'll eventually, like, the computer's not going to do what you want it to do. And that's going to be more than enough to let you know that you don't know what you're doing. Like,
yeah,
I still deal with that on a daily basis.
Yeah. So as far as like preparing for the OSCP, is there anything you would recommend for someone that you're different? Because there's a lot of resources out there now, a lot of different labs and stuff people could do. What would you recommend in that sense? Would you just recommend someone start out with the OSCP course, or are there other things that you would have them do first?
I mean, if it were me and if we're talking about somebody that has like just kind of a general working knowledge of computers, I would recommend, depending on budget, Hack the Box VIP is really nice to have, but I don't think you need it, just because I think there's a lot of free machines you can get out there from Vulnhub or, you know, various other places. My recommendation would be to If this is the level that somebody's at where they can pull down and, you know, spin up a VM and they kind of understand like that type of thing, or even not, just find a walkthrough and figure out how to do it. But just follow walkthroughs and kind of like figure out where things don't make sense to you and sort of spend time on those and research them and just, you know, kind of keep researching them until they do make sense. And kind of get to the point where you're able to even follow walkthroughs and it's at least sort of intuitive. So I don't think that you necessarily have to be able to, you know, pull down a random machine and like you can root it without looking at any walkthroughs or whatever. I kind of feel that like it's more about to relate it to something. Like if you were, you know, working on a car, next to, you know, a trained mechanic that knows how to fix this issue, if they're doing things or they're taking steps that kind of make sense to you, that you would think like, yeah, that would be the logical next step, or like, I can see why they're doing that. So I would kind of do walkthroughs, and see that you're at that point. And I kind of feel like if you're at that point on some machines to where, you know, getting command execution makes sense, you know, escalating your privileges makes sense. Like you understand that, hey, to do this, you know, I'm either like, I'm finding a credential, I'm, you know, getting code to execute as root. Like if those things kind of make sense to you, then I think that it probably makes sense to, or you'd probably be safe to begin the course. That would be kind of my recommendation. Just sort of the understanding of like those fundamental things with penetration testing.
Yeah, makes sense. So we're getting down close to the end of the show. Is there any advice that you would like to give or anything you'd like to discuss that we didn't touch upon?
No, I don't think so. Just looking forward to see a lot more people get in the industry and have fun. You know, it's always awesome to see people excited when they post stuff that they learn on Twitter or share their research. So that's kind of that's probably my favorite part of InfoSec. So definitely there's tons of room in this field. There's tons of stuff that I'm not personally interested in that I know a lot of other people would be interested in to learn. And yeah, there's tons of stuff out there, man. The field's huge. There's definitely room for anybody to get in.
Yeah. And I think pretty much there's so many different areas that people can find their area. You know, some people, you know, like pen testing and red teaming, but you know, there's some other areas that are kind of cool, like threat hunting and threat intelligence.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I've gotten a chance to kind of mess around with that a little bit myself. And yeah, that's a super interesting field. So I do red teaming now, and kind of learning the other side of that, you know, the detection side of it is super fun. So I know anybody that red teams is definitely familiar with, you know, when you're using a technique against on an engagement, you know, what indicators are you leaving? You know, what does it mean on the back end? Like what traces of evidence are you leaving? What logs are you leaving? That type of stuff. So we all get that, but like actually looking for that stuff, is super fun. So trying to like basically find yourself or find somebody that's doing the same things on the back end, it obviously from the red side, like feels like, oh well, you just look for this and this, and it's not always like necessarily that easy as I'm seeing. And it's super fun. And yeah, so that would actually probably be one of my biggest pieces of advice is if you are getting into security, I know we're kind of more offensive focused here, but there's a ton of different spaces. So I would say make sure that you explore them all in detail, and kind of know what they are and know what people do in those jobs day to day. If you are able to talk to people that do those jobs and see what they're like, and you may find out that, you know, pen testing sounds cool, but this sounds a lot cooler. So I think I'm going to go do this instead.
Very cool. So thanks for joining us, Corey. I appreciate you joining. It was a pleasure talking to you and cool to get to learn some new things about you that I didn't know.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on.
Thanks, everyone, for joining, and we'll see you on the next episode.
BugCrowd's award-winning platform combines actionable contextual intelligence with the skill and experience of the world's most elite hackers to help leading organizations identify and fix vulnerabilities, protect customers, and make the digitally connected world a safer place. Learn more at bugcrowd.com.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Hacker Factory podcast with Philip Wiley. If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share ITSBmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.